Good morning. Happy Sunday. It's good to be together. We've just come to the end of our second week of 40 Days of Faith. 40 Days of Faith is an annual season that we celebrate and practice together here at Reservoir that corresponds with the Lenten season leading up to Easter. And during 40 Days of Faith, we as a community are invited to experiment with new ways of connecting with God and connecting with each other and connecting to the deep hopes and desires that we have inside of ourselves. And there are a number of tools that we utilize here at Reservoir during 40 Days of Faith to help us in this experimental season. Some of these things you can find in a table in the dome on your way out if you're interested in grabbing some more stuff about this. Some of the experiments that we do, we have a daily Bible guide that invites us, those of us who are interested, to read little chunks of the Bible every day and to have a spiritual practice attached to it to see what we might learn of God and God's way of soaking the world through these stories. Some of us have prayers that we pray on a daily basis during these 40 days, and still others of us engage in some sort of fasting during this season. So all of these ways are different ways for us to test and engage, ways that we can connect and engage in a God-soaked world. We're going to check in with one of these little experiments today. When you walked in, you should have gotten a set of cards, one white and one blue. I mentioned that there are some daily prayers that some of us participate in during this season. If this is your first Sunday at Reservoir during 40 Days of Faith, you haven't missed much, and there's always a good chance to jump in, which is right now. So what we're going to do for a few minutes at the beginning of our time together is to think about two of the prayers that we're invited to engage in this season. And the first prayer is, what do you want God to do for you? What's a deep longing or desire in your heart that you want to hold in an open hand before God this season? Don't be afraid to ask something big, something deep. Part of the fun of the experiment is seeing where Jesus shows up for us and with us in the space of our prayers. So in a moment, you'll be invited to capture on your white card this prayer. What do you want God to do for you? Maybe you've already thought of this and you've been praying it for these 2 weeks already. Maybe you haven't thought about it and this is a good moment to do that. Check in to see if there's a prayer that God might be inviting you into in the season, or if there's a desire that you sense starting to bubble up inside of yourself. And then the second card is your blue card. And one of the other prayers that many of us regularly pray in this season of 40 days is, what do you want God to do for your church or your city? So if you have a prayer related to that, either one you've been praying or one you want to think about right now, you can capture that prayer for your church or your city on your blue card. We're going to take a moment now to be quiet and to kind of lean into these prayers. There should be markers as well as pens in the little buckets in front of you if you want to grab something to capture your prayer on. We'll take another 10 seconds or so. You want to jot any last things down for this moment. A little later in the service, I'll invite you, if you want, to add these prayers to a story that we're creating throughout these 40 days. There is an ever-growing work of art happening on the walls of the sanctuary during these 40 days, and this art tells a story of what it's like to engage in a God-soaked world, what a God-soaked world might look like. And if you want, during our worship time later, you'll be invited, if you want, to go and add one of the prayers or both of the prayers that you jotted down to this wall. Our prayers are a beautiful part of this tapestry, the story that we're creating together of how we long for God to soak our world, how we're doing what we can to engage in this world filled with God's presence. So again, later I'll invite you, if you want, to add your story, your prayer to this wall of stories here. And today I'm going to share a little bit of my story with you. And before we get to that, tell one other story first. The story that I'm going to share to begin is the story of a boy named Samuel. For those of you who are following along in the Bible guide, again, these little daily chunks of scripture that some of us are reading during this 40 days of faith season, you may remember Samuel from our readings this week. Samuel's story, like all of our stories, begins even before Samuel is born. His mother, Hannah, is married to a man named Elkanah, and she is one of four wives of Elkanah, the only one of whom is barren. And for years and years and years, the thing Hannah wants most in the world is a child. She cries out to God over and over and over again that she might have a child. And one year when Elkanah has taken his whole household, his whole family, to the temple, the place where the people of Israel would come to make sacrifices to God, where they would offer their prayers and their hopes before God, Hannah just weeps and weeps and weeps and weeps. And she says, God, would you please give me a child? And if you do, I promise that I'll give that child right back to you. I'll bring him to the temple, and he'll live here as a priest, as someone who ministers to you. On this trip to the temple, God hears Hannah's cry, and he meets her in this deep longing, and she conceives a child. When Samuel is born and then is weaned, Hannah makes good on her promise to God, and she takes her little boy, and she brings him to the temple. And she leaves him there under the tutelage of a priest named Eli. And it's with Eli that Samuel will grow up to learn how to minister as a priest before God, helping to make sacrifices on behalf of God's people and offer prayers on their behalf. If you want to follow along with this story, you can find it on the inside flap of your yellow program. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord under Eli. The word of the Lord was rare in those days, and visions were not widespread. At the time, Eli the priest, whose eyesight began to grow dim, he was lying down in his room, and then Samuel was lying down in his room. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, but they were preparing to sleep. In verse 4, then as Samuel is sleeping, the Lord calls out to him and says, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel thinks that this is Eli, so he goes running to Eli. Eli, what do you want? And Eli's like, I'm sleeping. Why are you bothering me? Go back to bed. So Samuel goes off and he lies down again. This scenario happens two more times where Samuel's lying down. He hears this voice calling his name, thinks it's Eli, runs to Eli. The second time, Eli says again, Samuel, go back to bed. But the third time, Eli thinks, maybe something's going on. Maybe this is the voice of God that none of us have been hearing for a long time. So he tells Samuel this time that if he hears the voice again, instead of thinking that it's Eli and running to wake Eli up again, to say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So at verse 10, we read, now the Lord came and he stood there calling as before, Samuel, Samuel. And this time Samuel says, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. And God goes on to talk to Samuel. Samuel gets actually a pretty crazy message from God that has pretty significant consequences for Eli and Eli's family, the future of the people of God of Israel. And if you want to read more about that story, you can pick up the Bible guide on the dome table on your way out. When I read the story of Samuel, I have this sense of kinship with him. In my younger years, when I look back on the earlier chapters of my life, I have this sense of, like Samuel, kind of growing up in the temple, in the house of God, a combination of the family that I was raised in, the church communities we were a part of, this one included. I spent a lot of my life thinking about God, spending time in the quote-unquote house of God, so to speak. But more than that, as a young child and teenager, I actually really loved God. And I found Jesus to be absolutely mesmerizing. And I spent so much time wanting to be friends with God, to know this being, this person that I sensed loved me very much, that loved this world very much, and that I could actually know. But at the same time, I also really, really wanted to hear from God, kind of in the way that Samuel did. I wanted to be able to hear a voice that I knew was God, that would tell me things, that would help me figure things out. And so the same period of my life, childhood into early teenagerhood, was marked by this longing to hear God, whatever God sounded like. I wanted to know. And in some ways, similarly to Samuel, around the time I was 16, I too had a moment where I went from not recognizing the voice of God to recognizing it. It's what Steve last week might have called a vivid spiritual experience, this moment that I started to understand what God sounded like to me. And this experience was very marking, and it defined the next bit of my spiritual journey into my college years in a pretty significant way. I was really curious to continue to hear this voice, see what I could learn of it, see where this voice would lead me. But despite all of these similarities, this sense of kinship that I share with Samuel, the way we were raised, the way we came to hear God's voice in some way, the line that struck me in this passage came from the beginning. And the word of the Lord was rare in those days. Because after my first 20 years or so of soaking in God's nearness, I went through a 6-year period where the word of the Lord was rare in my life, where it was really hard to sense God's voice and God's presence. After this vibrant youth where loving God and being loved by God was this accessible daily reality for me, distance and doubt entered into my life, and they decided to settle in and stay for a while. I went through a rough chapter during part of my college years. I was in a low place, and joy was hard to find. And in this low place, this low moment, I fell for someone. And the prospect that something might happen gave this sense of spark and light to this otherwise very bleak time. But I didn't sense God's stamp of approval on this potential relationship. In fact, it felt like God was maybe even whispering to me that this wasn't something that God wanted for me. Nevertheless, it seemed good and joy-inspiring to me, so I kept on seeing what might happen. But when my interest proved to be unrequited, it felt somehow like God had denied me this budding joy in an otherwise rough time, and I took this as an affront. Such a simple thing that happens to people all the time. Probably some of us have stories like that here in this room of having feelings for someone that aren't reciprocated, not working out. In some ways, this was such an ordinary event. But coupled with the low space that I was in, I was so angry about this ordinary event. And instead of rationally coming to terms with the fact that this person wasn't interested in me, I blamed this whole thing on God. I became so angry at God because I thought that in God's sort of disapproval, not getting the stamp of approval on this thing that I hoped would happen, that somehow God had made it not happen. And so I started to question and doubt God. God, if this is how you love, denying me things that feel joyful in an otherwise bleak time, then I'm not really interested in this version of love. If this is your definition of caring for me and loving me, then I don't know if I want to be loved by you. And I started to pull away. I no longer trusted God to be good and for my good. And the word of the Lord was rare in those days. Thus began this long 6-year period where God's love, goodness, and presence were really hard to come by. And I wasn't even sure if I wanted to find them. I kept on doing my life, doing what I had always done. The rhythms of my life didn't change. I would go to school and then eventually would go to work, spent time with people. My life on the outside looked the same, but internally, there was this absence where I had once experienced presence. And there was silence where I had once had this voice of my friend Jesus. I started making decisions on my own without checking in with God. And I had been so sure about God for so long, this whole childhood and youth, where I just like didn't even question anything about God and his love for me. It was just came so naturally to me. And then all of a sudden, this thing that I could only call doubt entered the picture. And I found doubt to be utterly terrifying. It unmoored me and it set me loose from the anchors that had held me for so long. It would take me a really long time to understand doubt as a gift. And the word of the Lord was rare in those days. During a recent time with my community group, community groups are spaces that we have here at Reservoir to connect with one another throughout the week. They're really wonderful, and if you're not a part of one and you want to be a part of one, you should ask someone near you after the service if they're a part of one and see what stories that they have to tell about it. But anyways, this one week recently in my community group, we were having a conversation about seasons where God feels distant from us, where we have this sense of dryness, distance in our spiritual lives, when it doesn't feel like God is soaking our world or soaking our hearts. These seasons where the word of the Lord, the presence of God, seem rare. And for many in my community group, a dry season meant missing a nearness to God that once was, or feeling like nearness to God is something that could be accessible for some, but not for us. Some of us had situations where horrible things had happened to us that made us mistrust God. Others of us were in really busy seasons of life where our margin was being eaten away by work and commitments to family and to friends and to other things, and ways that once we had connected to God as a source of energy, just didn't feel present anymore. Others of us added that we were out of habits that had once helped us feel more regularly connected to Jesus. And some of us felt like stress had become such an insidious thing in our lives that it was somehow stealing our joy. In all of these scenarios, our spiritual lives, our kind of inner wells felt low, felt dry, and God's presence didn't seem very close at hand. In my own case, as I started to distance myself from God at the beginning of this season of distance and doubt, I found myself closing off my heart and building up walls, saying, God, I'm no longer interested. I started tuning out this voice of love, no longer sure if I wanted to hear it, no longer sure if I could trust it. But the fact was, as distant and as disconnected as I felt from Jesus, I wasn't willing to give all the way up on him. We had too much history and we had loved each other for too long. I confess that sometimes this was maddening. It was like having a really annoying relative that I couldn't shake from my life. But at the same time, it was like I had this tiny twinge, the faintest of hopes, that maybe God and I could one day find each other again. And since it seemed that God wasn't willing to give all the way up on me either, it seemed that God took my meager offering, took advantage of these tiny little cracks in this wall that I had built, and started to let a little bit of light shine in. Looking back, I started to catch glimpses of God in some surprising spaces during that season marked by distance. In retrospect, it occurs to me that God understood that somewhere trust had been broken and came to find me thus in very gentle ways. God met me in new ways, not speaking to me in this voice that I had learned to discern as a teenager, like the voice that Samuel heard. But he started speaking to me in the spaces of my everyday life. I started experiencing little signs of his presence. I'll share a few of these snapshots with you. 3 years into this 6-year period of distance and doubt, I discovered the Catholic Church, and I found Mass to be this beautiful place for quiet spirituality. I didn't have the capacity to deal with louder and more expression and more exuberant expressions of worship that I had known in my earlier days. But in this quiet and structured setting, I could find some stillness for my heart. I discovered a group of Catholics called the Jesuits, who offered me a set of tools to experiment with some really practical ways of connecting with God and myself. Snapshot number 2. 5 years into this journey of distance and doubt, I found a book called Love Poems from God on my sister's bedside table. This was a gift that my mom had given to my sister that I stumbled upon one day. And these poetic meditations came from men and women throughout the centuries, from all sorts of religious traditions, from all corners of the globe, from Europe and Middle East and Africa. And these men and women in their poetic meditations kept commenting on the joyous and joyful nature of God. These poems were just brimming with happiness, with connection, with these rich and vibrant themes. So people like Rabia and Hafiz and Rumi and St. Teresa of Avila started hinting to me that there might be joy and delight in God, that God takes joy and delight in his creation, including me. I discovered this gift that wasn't even meant for me. It was meant for my sister, but God gave it to me as a gift anyway. 6 years into distance and doubt, in the middle of a very lonely weekend, in the middle of a lonely, lonely year, I showed up here to Reservoir one Sunday morning after a number of years of being away. And that day, someone invited me to do a program called Soccer Nights, a weekly summer soccer clinic that we run for kids and families in this neighborhood. I signed up to do Soccer Nights. I said yes. And through that process, met all of these really wonderful people who in the months and years to come would prove to be these great and wonderful friends who breathed life into those lonely spaces in my heart. And 4 years into this chapter marked by distance, disconnect, in the middle of one devastating loss that left me in a world of anger and pain, with the help of some friends, I started on a really long and slow journey of forgiveness that very, very, very slowly started expanding my heart again. And then a second devastating loss a couple years after that blew open the door of my heart in the best kind of ways, causing me to experience God's kindness and love in the midst of pain. These stories are isolated moments, 5 experiences over the course of 6 years. Not exactly a God-soaked world, but moments and drops and hints of God's presence. Each was an invitation in the midst of distance and questions and doubt to see Jesus in a new way, to be reminded of a God who loved me. I wish I could say that I had been intentional in seeking these experiences out, but really they came to me. I wasn't actively trying to bridge this distance between me and God, but God was kind to keep looking for me, to keep loving me, to keep inviting me to know him in new ways. And God kept meeting me in the happenings of my everyday life. The word of the Lord was rare, but it wasn't totally absent. Again, these little drops of rain beginning to water my heart back to life. And this was one of 2 big aha moments that I had as I started to find myself reawakening to God towards the end of this 6-year period of feeling so distant. The first aha moment was this, that God communicates to us personally in so many ways. God speaks to us in ways by which we already relate to the world, in ways that we're already wired to be open to and to receive. And because there's 7 billion people on this planet who relate to the world in 7 billion different ways, I got the sense that there had to be at least that many ways that God can personally connect to us, making God's self known to us. I sensed that God was soaking the world in the spaces of the everyday, and that we have the chance to open our senses and imagination to taste and touch and feel God's presence. And I noticed God doing this all along in this week's Bible guide, encountering characters in the midst of their everyday lives in ways that made sense to each of these people. In each of these stories, God is everywhere, soaking in the spaces of these people's everyday lives. For those of you who read, you might remember some of these friends. The first being Hannah, Samuel's mom. For years, the only thing that she's crying out for, the thing that she wants more than anything, is to have a child. Talk about the everyday, every single day, wanting something that you don't yet have. God meets her in that longing that she carries with her day after day after day. And then we have Elijah. Elijah is a man who one day is on the hunt for God, and he's looking for God in nature. And he looks for these dramatic natural phenomena to see if he can find God therein. So he sees an earthquake and he's like, God, are you there? No. Sees a fire. God, are you there in the fire? No. These huge winds come gushing along. God, are you in the winds? No. Elijah finally finds God in silence, in the unfilled and unspoken moments of the everyday. God meets an unnamed, destitute widow in the place of her lack. He goes into her pantry and sees that there's oil and takes this little bit of oil and starts pouring it out and out and out until all of a sudden there are gallons and gallons of oil that have come from just this little bit. With this oil, this woman is able to go pay off her debts and rise out of destitution, God meeting her in her pantry. Jehoshaphat, another character that we find in this week's Bible guide, is a general in the army, and one day he's at work. He's preparing his people to fight in battle. And he worships God, and then God shows up to his place of work, helping to push back his enemies on this day of battle, helping Jehoshaphat to conquer. These spiritual experiences happen in the minutiae of everyday life, in the midst of heartbreak and work and a practically empty pantry. God speaking to each of these people in the language of their hearts. God meeting people in the spaces of their everyday, even when the word of the Lord feels rare, even where there's been pain and waiting, like with Hannah longing for her child, or this destitute widow who's lost her husband and lost her source of income. The word of the Lord might be rare, but God is still there soaking their worlds. And this was the second aha moment that I had, that the word of the Lord can be rare in our lives, and God can be everywhere, inviting us to engage in a world soaked with God's presence. It's a paradox that I don't understand, but it's one that I hold as a mystery that I look forward to continuing to get to know more and more. And I caught a glimpse of something that made me think of this paradox, that gave me a visual image of it. One day I was about to fly somewhere, so I was sitting on a plane, and this particular day was wet and cold and rainy. It was just a gray, dreary day. Not rainy enough that we couldn't take off, but just like kind of nasty little drizzling weather. So I'm sitting there on the tarmac looking out of this window at the rainy runway, and then we take off and I see this gray city getting smaller and smaller the more we get up, and then just flying through like the darkest, the grayest cloud cover. Just a really nasty, nasty kind of day. And I must have blinked, because the next thing I knew, the sun was blinding my eyes, and there was this bright blue brilliant sky out the window. When we broke through the cloud cover, we got to something that I hadn't been able to see. That even on this gray, horrible, disgusting rainy day, the darkest, darkest clouds sitting above the city, the sun was still doing what the sun always does, radiating the world. This blue sky still a reality, even in the reality of this rainy and cloudy day. And it struck me that the word of the Lord can be rare, that the clouds can be thick, and the sun can still be shining. God can still be soaking our world, even if it's at a level that we don't see and don't experience. This is just a little bit of my story, and I don't presume it to be anyone else's. And I think that if someone had told me on a day where doubt felt so real, where I felt so far from God, "Oh, Kate, don't worry. There's still blue sky above. There's still a sun shining," I would have just been like, "Please, don't even begin." So I don't say this to say that it's a solution or that it makes sense of any realities that some of us might be experiencing today. But I did love that in the midst of the season of distance and doubt, this rainy plane ride gave me a glimpse of something that I could come to experience, of God soaking my world, even in spaces where the clouds felt particularly thick. I'll leave you with a few invitations based on things that I learned from the season in doubt as we come to a close. If you're someone who likes to fill in your yellow program, this will be your moment to do that. First, remember that the way forward isn't the way back. Remember how I was sharing that I had these early years of feeling so connected to God and connected to Jesus's presence and love? Well, in that long season of feeling distant from God, I sometimes worried that the only way for me to be close to God again was to go back to what I had known before and to how I had experienced God before. But there were things from when I was younger that I didn't want to go back to, and there were new things of God that I had discovered through this journey, through doubt, the space of distance, that I did want to hold on to, like the beauty of forgiveness, like the way that doubt made things so much more expansive in my life. I didn't want to give up on that. I wanted something new, even if I wanted to return to God, to this person that I loved. The way forward isn't the way back. It's onward, and it incorporates new parts of who we are, new parts of God that we've caught a glimpse of, and it can mean entering into new spaces that God widens for us. Maybe some of you can relate to this feeling, that your most connected days are behind you, that you used to experience more of God, and that somehow you have to get back to the way things once were. But what if the invitation is to keep moving forward? What if God is in fact calling you onward and inviting you into new and beautiful and expansive places? Second, keep an open heart to God and to how God personally communicates with you. Each of us is created uniquely, and God gets that. God meets us in places that God knows will delight and capture our hearts. My hope is that each of us can discover ways that God is personally communicating to us in the spaces of our everyday lives, right in the middle of our work, in our schedules, our commitments to family and friends and the people around us. Because when Jesus came, he offered us something that he called the new covenant. He said that the old way has passed and a new way has come, and he left us with a promise that God would in fact make God's self known to everyone. That Jesus left us his spirit, and that his spirit is everywhere, soaking every corner of our world and every corner of our lives. Maybe some of you wonder if you have to change or become something else to be someone who can experience God, that somehow there are spiritual people and that you landed over here, not quite on the same side, and that at best you would somehow have to jump tracks to kind of get in line with these spiritual people. But what if God is already soaking your world, personally communicating with you in ways that you are uniquely wired to receive? Ask God to give you insight into what these ways may be. And I would invite you to pay attention to what brings you joy and to the things that you're grateful for. Because when I look closely, I often see God soaking those joyful places. I want to say something too here about keeping an open heart. In my mistrust of God, I built walls, and it took a lot of long, slow work over the course of years to get those walls to gently and sometimes not so gently crumble down and to trust God with my heart again. But the more that I live life, the more that I observe the cyclical nature of this life we've been given, that there are seasons of the soul and cycles of highs and lows. We've seen it throughout the course of these stories today. Hannah has the season of barrenness that eventually gives birth to life. Samuel grows up not hearing the voice of God, and then suddenly the word of the Lord is no longer rare. Samuel starts to hear God. We live in New England, marked by these seasons. And I've started to notice little buds coming back to life after this winter that we've had. Yes, today I am in a broader and more vibrant place with God than I was 5 years ago. But I know that life will bring more hard or dark or distant times. My hope is on the next go. I keep my heart open to God. That even in whatever pain that the next moment may bring, whatever doubt that it might invite me to welcome into my life, I hope that I can trust God to be good based on this history that we continue to build together. I hope I can keep a soft heart towards my kind and dear friend Jesus, and I hope that I can be more trusting on the next go. So I'm practicing in the small things, in the daily disappointments of life, in those moments of pain, trying to keep my heart open and soft, saying, God, thank you that you see me and that you hear me, that in this little moment of pain, you know how hard this is for me. Thank you that you're here with me and you're with me in it, and that you can be strong to help me. Third, welcome an experience of God that is more humble and less certain. If you had asked me before my season of distance and doubt what I thought of God, I hope my answer would have been winsome, but it certainly would have been sure. Doubt, on the other hand, made me way less sure about things. But it offered me a more humble understanding of my experience of God and much more curious about others' experiences as well. Not just to be a good listener, but to actually see if there's something that I could learn from, that I could take in, that I could practice. This kind of humility is one of our core values here at Reservoir, that we would be a community of learners, even in our pursuit of Jesus. And this is one of the things that I love most about our church. Doubt was really scary when I first encountered it, but now I welcome it as a gift. It keeps me more open, more grateful for the mystery, more curious to lean into the mystery. I mentioned earlier this book of poems that I came across when I was feeling distant from God, and one poem came from a Sufi mystic named Rumi. And Rumi writes this: if God said, Rumi, pay homage to everything that has helped you enter into my arms, there is not one experience of my life, not one thought, not one feeling, nor any act that I would not bow to. And in the spirit of this poem, I look back and I give thanks to doubt for teaching me something new about God, for making me more compassionate towards others. I give thanks for the season of distance because all of these moments shaped my understanding of God, drawing me deeper into my own human experience and God's divine life. Give thanks for your realities and let them propel you into deeper and humbler connection with God and with others. Lastly, four, give thanks to a God who walks alongside us, soaking every corner of our world. I'm so grateful that even when we don't have a lot of hope or a lot of energy to muster in our love for God, that God keeps on loving us, keeps on walking alongside of us, keeps on being that sun shining on a blue sky, regardless of whether the clouds are there or not. If you find yourself longing for connection with God today, either because you're wanting something you've never had and aren't sure where to find it, or because you're missing a nearness that you once had, my hope is that you can start to see God soaking your world everywhere. That you could start to see how Jesus is personally communicating to you in unique and beautiful ways. Because Jesus invited us into this new covenant, this new promise, that he left his spirit and that his spirit is everywhere.